It is 11 o'clock.
Oh man, this is rocking out. Look at it go.
It's good, Richard.
Oh, I forgot to play.
Oh, we'll play. He's so excited watching the.
I'm going to join in now.
Okay.
There, did you like that?
I did indeed. for all of you musical aficionados out there, that was Richard Pollock on the Strato Microcaster.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's a really awesome little device.
It's a Lloyd Lore style mandolin.
Oh, okay, that was my second guess. Yeah, very nice.
Well, I just like, you know, when I'm doing science, I find that playing a mandolin
it always helps.
It sparks up your synapses and irons out your neurons and smooths all that sciencey stuff along.
Oh, get the wrinkles out.
Good morning, Robert Strong.
Good morning, Richard Pollock. Hey, you're listening to Radio Science News. This is October 16th, 2021. This is episode number 808 in a series.
808.
I know, 808.
I wish I had a car that had an 808 in it.
I wish I did too. But hey, any number that ends in an 8 is certainly not a prime number. So the factors are 2, 2, 2, and 101.
Wow. But you know, if you turn that 808 like a 90 degrees,
upside down,
it looks like infinity divided by infinity or something.
Or something. Affinity, oh, infinity.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Oh.
Oh, infinity.
Yeah.
Hey, I am infinitely happy to be here doing Radio Science News, even though I'm seeing that the weather has changed.
Yeah, it is.
It's
definitely
dim.
October in Wheeling.
It is. I think, you know, almost by coincidence, you and your lovely wife and my lovely wife and myself and some visitors from Arizona were able to ramble around the Blackwater Falls.
Oh, Blackwater
region
Falls was
for
so
fall colors.
Beautiful.
Wonderful.
The fall colors and I've been to Blackwater Falls numerous times, but I normally go to the falls, and Libby, who is from that area, goes, you know, we should go on some of the walks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, oh, my God, I did not realize that the vistas were so phenomenal there.
Well, one of our favorite places, and having visited different times of the year, it's really neat because you actually find out, and I'm going to say Lindy Point, if you're a Blackwater Falls.
That is spectacular. If you do not go to Lindy Point, I now realize I have missed going to Blackwater Falls.
Yeah. So, as I say, my wife and I have been there many times of the year. And, you know, we've seen spring and summer, and we've been there last year we were up there for the big blizzards, you know, in the middle of the winter, and we still hiked everything.
Yeah.
And to see places that you now recognize, in the springtime, this is where particular wildflowers come up. And now you're seeing, it's piled up with leaves and these mushrooms. It's like visiting an old friend.
It's just gorgeous. One of the things that I liked about the Lindy Point walk, and it's not a very long walk.
No, it's nice.
Is that there are these roots everywhere. The tree roots come above ground, and some of the tree roots look like rocks, and some of the rocks look like tree roots.
And there are some fossils there, if you're
and,
watching
yes,
closely.
It's beautiful, just beautiful. Libby kept looking at me going, what are you doing? I'm saying, I'm taking pictures of these roots. These roots are so gorgeous.
Well, as a mathematician, did you find any square roots?
I found square roots, fractal roots, cube roots. Yeah, there were a lot of roots.
All right. Well, just one route I want you to do is to get these folks these folks to the launch pad of science.
Let's do that.
We'll
if you folks are driving your car, even if it tells you it can drive it by itself, really you need to pull over.
Don't trust your car.
Don't trust your car. If you go to www.smartcenter.org, that takes you to my favorite web page on the internets, and it gives you all things interesting going on here at the Smart Center. If you find on that first page the little trifecta rainbows, you got it. Somebody made this for a t-shirt for
us. That's right. I was
years ago.
I think I was at a carnival that I think was the very carnival that was written about in Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Probably.
And there was an artiste who was doing spray, you know, like this real cool air. And
it's gorgeous.
He did a great job.
It's gorgeous.
I still have that t-shirt.
So Richard took three pictures of it, and just above that is the live link to Radio Science News, and that brings us to October 16th, 2021. And there's all kinds of neat stuff here. You can go to the Rossi blog, which I just want to say, if you haven't been on and you're into interesting science, that is probably going to be a game changer.
Or if you're thinking about maybe investing in molten salt reactors or something,
please do not invest in molten salt reactors.
I'm playing anticipatory music.
Okay, so we've got
twindemic.
That's a neat term. Clean energy. Well, there's something that we all want.
Well, maybe we'll see how that story turns out.
China launch. Yeah. So the Chinese dressed in their beautiful futuristic outfits.
I think they had silk spacesuits.
They were awesome.
They were very good.
Three folks from China just went to the Chinese space station.
Literally this morning.
Yes. Interesting that they didn't go to the International Space Station.
Well,
yeah, there's some interesting politics there. And then there's more.
The initial story I put up about the China launch was telling you very deeply about what they were doing and yet it. But then the launch was when, I mean, the interesting thing, they, of course, launched at right after midnight their time, mm-hmm. which was basically Friday night when I was putting some of this stuff together. So I knew that they had successfully launched, and I added some more stuff. And then the part that's interesting is, you know, as you and I and other people often will look for the International Space Station as it traverses the night sky, mm-hmm. their station, the Tiangong space, every one of their stations has these sort of like poetic things, you know, like tree of love, heavenly this, and so that was pretty cool. And it led to a page of, well, how can you find this? And I have friends who not only enjoy the International Space Station, but even though they don't know exactly what they're always looking at, they'll note how many satellites are now in the sky. Yeah. So this site is going, for those people, that's very cool. And this is a new cool piece of thing about finding exoplanets, Robert, and we all want to find them.
So is this the exoplanets done by not optical, but the radio waves?
Some of the SETI people. And speaking of radio waves, they found some very strange and unexplained radio waves coming from the center of our galaxy.
I wonder what that could be. That could be all kinds of interesting stuff.
It could be the Chewy Chocolate Center is what I'm thinking. NASA has a project called Lucy that I was not all that up to date on. And so this is like five things you should know about. then, Robert, you are going to be excited about this cool white dwarf.
Okay.
And you know white dwarfs are cool.
So is this a new, or is this a nearby?
Well, it's not. The thing that makes it very unusual is that this thing spins so fast. It's a new record in terms
of. I am intrigued.
As you have mentioned today's weather here in Wheeling, one of the things that you have often said this to folks when they're talking about, well, you know, look at this weather we're having. How could there be? And you tell everybody that, look, everything is connected.
Yes,
you know,
everything is
connected.
When you talk
about weather, you have to think climate, weather, these are similar but not exactly.
Right.
Well, one of these things has to do with the fact that they have now recognized that there is a synchronization between the Gulf Stream and another big stream on the other side of the planet that is like a 10-year resonance where they synchronize over 10
You're
years.
You're kidding. How cool is that?
And I think
that, I just want to say that does not surprise me. In fact, it would surprise me if they found one that was not.
Right. Well, but what's hard for people to do is like
cool.
to recognize something over a period of time.
Yes, yeah, and, long periods
and
of time.
And explain, why is this happening? It seemed like it happened when I was graduating from high school, mm-hmm. and it's happening again. Well, right. this goes to that sort of... And the other thing that I just love is you and I literally talked about concrete or our nanocrete like last couple weeks or so. And one of the things that has always mystified people is... the fact that everybody goes, well, you know, why are they replacing all those bridges on the interstate again after only 10 years? Well, mm-hmm. everybody goes, well, you know, concrete starts to crumble after. Well,
no, actually,
people that understand concrete understand that, you know, it's actually supposed to get stronger as time goes on.
It's supposed to get stronger over time.
And wouldn't you know that the ancient Romans actually have concrete that did that? Some more insight into that.
So don't tell me that the ancient Romans didn't use rebar.
They used olive oil. And it's going to be interesting to see. Now I have the chart. We have tried to be somewhat consistent in taking a quick look at the chart.
All right.
To get a sense of where we are in, the COVID issue. So the chart. Let me see. I'm clicking on my chart. It's the COVID data tracker. What we kind of do is point out to everybody that this thing has, if you scroll down, it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many different ways of looking at it. Rates of vaccination among pregnant people, vaccinations by ethnicity, age, sex, on and on. You know, there's a lot of wonderful information, but what we've kind of been doing is like looking at the top. They give you the top little thing where, I mean, at first you're thinking it's an Amazon logo or something because it's a, but part of what you can see is that when I looked at this the last time, you understand that some things are present day indicators like cases total over the last, right. and it has the last 30 day trend. And then they have deaths, which is the last 30 day trend too. And sometimes you see this one is coming down where this one has stayed up or it's flattening out. And now, I mean, at the very end of this little thing, it was coming down and now it looks like it's like leveling off or popping up again. So,
yeah.
Anyway, a lot of information here. We don't want to dwell on this because this is available for you to come back. And as I say, you can study your state, you can study your ethnicity, all sorts of interesting things, community profiles. But there's a lot of good data here, and I think they've done a pretty good job of laying it out. There's a whole new thing, a section here. I'm looking at pediatric data. In fact, let's just click on that just because it'll be... Here's pediatric data compared with adults. Birth and infant outcomes, all this has to do with if you have COVID during pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
vaccination equity.
Wow, there's a lot of stuff on
there.
There
is a lot of great stuff.
There appears to be more stuff now than the last time I looked. Just they look like they're...
Well, the thing is, I'm just going to say, for whatever else is going on, say, with this particular group of people running the CDC and maybe the last group, these folks are at least putting out massive amounts of data. So
I'm about 40% down the scroll.
What
do
you see?
I'm seeing global COVID-19 vaccinations. Track the progress of vaccination rollout by country.
Oh, okay. Well, let me tell
you. How cool is
actually,
that?
Actually, I talked about that briefly last week because somebody who Twitters to Dr. Rick Bryce thing had sent a thing saying, so what happens when you're the person that comes up with the vaccines and produces them and distributes them and everything? And the answer was, you're 48th in the world. The United States, among all these other nations, is like 48th in the deployment of vaccinations.
Isn't that
per capita.
Embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, and then it's also dangerous. But, you know, yeah, like they give the first bunch, and then if you enlarge the thing, you basically find out that... we're way down the list. So
Gibraltar is first, then Pitcairn Island.
A lot of times, of course, you have to say, "Well, I know if they're a small place, but there are comparable population densities that are ahead of us." I mean, like places like Portugal, they're like 98%. Come on, we can do better.
That?
And then even as I'm just going to sadly say, as we leave this and go back to our first story, that I'm seeing, well, hey, the Chicago Police Department is only 50% vaccinated or something like that.
What is that all about?
Well, you know, you've got your gun to protect you and you're all set.
No.
All right, I'm jumping back to the first story because I know.
That's astounding. Okay.
I'm just going to say we can do better.
We
must do better.
We have to do better. We can do better. Yes, we can do anything, but we got to do this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like I've often said to my mom, I can clean my room. And she would say,
but
no,
I won't.
No, you must clean your room. All right, let's jump back to Twindemic. This is just interesting because I'm going to say that my dear sweet wife was scheduled for her booster shot. I actually got mine earlier because I had I've got some medical things that meant I should have gotten it a little earlier. But when she went, they said, hey, while you're here, you should
get the quadrivalent
flu shot, yep. Which is a really
smart move,
really an excellent thing. So the reason why this is important, first she was thinking, well, gee, I don't want to get two shots that I'm going to have to react to. And basically we had no reactions, significant reactions at all, although some people have. This is one of the things that people are concerned. As cooler autumn days arrive, experts are once again warning that the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic is about to collide with the cold and flu season. And they're saying it's possible the flu season may be worse than average, in part because last year's was so shockingly mild.
Yeah.
Now, with all the isolation.
Now, when you got your flu shot at the same time,
yeah.
Is this all one shot?
No, two separate shots.
It's two separate shots.
Yeah. And I said, okay. That's good because I have two arms.
There you go.
Two arms. One if by sea, two if by land. Or whatever. I'm off on a different show here.
Peel off those shoulder pads.
Now this story has some interesting stuff, and I want us to, we'll look through all the other stuff, but here's what I found cool. If you scroll down right below where it says flu-related hospitalizations in 2020 through 2021 were the lowest ever recorded. And the actual flu was the lowest.
Isn't that fascinating?
And here's what's interesting, because this next paragraph says something. One influenza strain seems to have died out during the COVID winter surge. And they're still remain puzzled by the mild outbreaks, blah, blah, blah. But part of what I'm looking at here is, oh, wait a minute. So if there's something that is a pandemic or endemic, running through, and for whatever reason, everybody has to isolate, it's possible that this particular virus
could go away.
It literally goes away because it didn't have enough.
That's what we're trying to do with COVID-19.
Well,
take your vaccines.
Yes, I.
Oh.
So I mean, even though this was just a little passing paragraph,
they
kind of say one seems to just have died
out. One seems to have just, because there weren't enough people for
it
to be in, and when it runs its course and it doesn't have anybody to go into, it comes to an end.
Yeah, it's almost like saying, oh, well, because there weren't very many leaves in the yard because I raked them this year, the wildfire didn't burn my house.
The wildfire just quit right in my yard.
Stomped itself out. So anyway, this is a cool...
If there is no fuel, the fire doesn't burn. If there's no people to infect because they're social distancing, they're washing their hands, they're wearing their masks, and so they are not easily to be infected, the virus goes out, folks.
Yeah. So this is a cautionary.
Wow.
They're not sure what's going to happen, but a lot of people, because they are seeing there are a couple other airborne things, RSV, the respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, if that's like something, especially if you're a preschool teacher, you know about that stuff. But the fact that there was a mild season last year means that, there's less immunity in the,
mm-hmm.
the from sure. year to year. So this is a cautionary thing. So anyway, keep an eye on this. And the most important thing is get your flu shot. I know so many people go, well, I don't want to get a flu shot. I got the flu shot after I had my...
Get a patch that does all of this stuff.
You know what? It's out there, but I don't want to get into that. There literally is a patch that has a COVID-19 and the flu on the same patch. I didn't want to tell you.
Where can I get one? That's so easy. I don't want to stick a piece of metal in my arm.
I would put it on my forehead.
I would put it across my nose bridge. I don't care.
I know.
Just, oh.
It's out there. And listen, that stuff is coming if we ever finally get our act together. Well, now, speaking of getting our act together.
Clean energy?
I'm going to click on clean energy. And you have to promise me not to use too much energy in the discussion of this story. You promise?
Okay. Deep breaths. All right.
Okay. So.
It says CNN. Okay. Clean energy program will likely be cut from the energy bill.
Oh,
that's a great idea. Gee.
All right, I'll read this paragraph. And I want you to just listen calmly.
I will try.
Take deep breaths. The clean
Wait. I see in the third line down somebody named Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
Yes, he's our senator.
Yes.
The clean the thing they were calling, it was called CLEP, I think, Clean Electricity Performance Program, the cornerstone climate policy in the massive social safety net, will likely be dropped from the final budget deal after pushback from one guy, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. That's what they're saying.
Well,
now,
this
isn't over yet. They say he's not there on the CEPP program. We've been trying. The aide told CNN the Democrats are trying to find ways to restructure the program to fit Manchin's concerns. Okay, so I'm going, now, what are his concerns?
Okay.
Because I want to be... I'm saying that this isn't over till it's over. And they're hoping that a deal will be struck. Let me see if it says, Democrats have designed the program to give utilities federal grants to increase their shares of electricity from clean sources.
That's a great idea.
And penalize those who fail to up their clean electricity. So, you know, it's like a carrot and a stick thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There have been discussions about lowering the program's emission standard to further allow for coal and natural gas-fired plants with carbon capture technology. Okay. But there's still doubt. So, I mean, the thing is, they're trying to. I think part of what we're looking at is that, I did hear a statement from Senator Manchin where part of what he was saying is, well, why are you going to pay a bunch of people to be moving toward what they should be moving toward? In other words, he's acknowledging
because
that
you're trying to help them move in that direction. That's why.
Well, then I would say, well, maybe you're right, Joe. Instead of paying anybody to do anything good, why don't we just penalize people for doing something wrong? See, there's my solution. Obviously, I'm not a politician.
Oh, too bad.
Just too bad.
It says, even though Manchin is a longtime proponent of the carbon capture,
he
recently cast doubt on its potential.
Unless you make it work.
I see. And
that's what I'm saying.
This is a quote, I'd love to have carbon capture, but we don't have the technology because we really haven't gotten to that point.
So get
and
to
it's
that
so
point.
Darn expensive that it is almost impossible. Okay, let's accept that as true because
I
believe it's true.
I'm going to continue reading.
I believe that's true. And because carbon capture is almost impossible and it's so expensive and everything else, just stop putting out the carbon.
Well, yeah.
It's not that complicated.
Actually, here's a sentence where I didn't realize this was further in the article.
Okay.
Manchin spokesman Sam Ryan told CNN in a statement, and now listen to this, so the senator has clearly expressed his concerns about using taxpayer dollars to pay private companies to do things they're already doing. Okay, I get that.
Okay.
You know, that has to be figured in because part of what he's trying to advocate for is not to be wasting tax money.
Sure.
Just like
I completely agree.
Like, for example, they spending all the taxpayer money to pay Exxon to do exploration when they're already doing
when
it to their own
doing
benefit.
Exploration.
Right.
So if that's the case, then you need to say, okay, oil companies and gas companies and coal companies, we're going to cut you off too.
Yeah, well.
So you need to do this for everybody. If you're going to say, hey, we're not going to pay you for doing what you're already doing, or we're not going to reimburse you for what you're already doing, then you've got to do this for everybody. You can't exempt somebody just because they have the word coal on their shirt.
Well, and one of the things they've always talked about, there was always the criticism of, I remember under the Obama administration, when they were advocating for solar and there were tax benefits for, they were saying, well, you can't pick winners. Well, even if you're going to acknowledge that it's going to be the market that does it, or but I'm going to say I still
everybody gets cut
right, and I'm still hopeful because according to Sam Ryan, now this last part of his statement, I'm going to say okay, he continues to support efforts to combat climate change because they say he has advocated for a carbon, which a lot of people are really against, while protecting American energy independence and ensuring our energy reliability. Okay, so let's take that one sentence.
Okay.
You and I talked about something that I told you that my friends from Arizona, where there's surprisingly little solar right in their backyard. They live in Phoenix, Arizona.
Right.
And they actually looked at trying to get solar panels on their house, and they ran into some weird constraints. Like he was saying, for example, he's actually works for a banking thing, and he said, you know, there's a big constraint if you have your house, like if you've done a reverse mortgage on your house. Well, there's something about they don't want you to be doing anything that changes the, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, we know that, for example,
that's
solar,
an improvement.
Well, I know.
That's
I know.
An improvement on
no,
the house.
No, but it's a change, Robert.
That is like going, we're going to put in an extra bathroom.
Yeah, well,
that's a good thing.
But my point is, he's run into the fact that there seem to be constraints on making that progress. He's in Phoenix, Arizona. And you go out there, you look around Phoenix, Arizona, and you go, we were talking about heat, and he said, we were talking about Solar City, and he was saying, well, Solar City is, they'll do stuff commercially on commercial buildings, but when you start to do it in a residence, it becomes a real big issue. Like there's some people who...
Why?
Well, here'd be a perfect example. A lot of neighborhoods, they want all the neighborhoods to look the same with those beautiful rustic tiles on the roof.
Right.
And of course, as he mentioned, he said he knows that Solar City and these people are actually coming out with things that look just
that
like,
look exactly like
but part
that.
Of the thing is it becomes a whole different layer if you're going to it's like I know here in Wheeling when they were doing Victorian Wheeling that they were saying, hey, you got to let us know how what color you're going to paint first because we want to maintain continuity but let's forget Phoenix, Arizona because I'm not going to go there in the near future. I don't want to. But you and I drove around the Blackwater Falls region. And anybody who drives around the Blackwater Falls or Elkins thing and recognizes
windmills everywhere.
Now, the thing that you and I started seeing elsewhere, and you pointed out some specific ones, you're starting to see a whole bunch of deployment of solar farms.
But not in West Virginia.
Oh, they're in Maryland?
They're in Maryland.
Okay. Well, now, there are a couple in Maryland because the company that put one in Maryland, we did a story, I know, months ago. But you're right. So as I look at Senator Manchin's complaints, I'm going... Okay. We want to let me quote him. We're going to protect American energy independence,
right,
and ensure our energy reliability. Why would you not recognize that in the state of West Virginia, we have tons of areas? Let me just take one for example. I really hate that I had to drive into Elkins and show my friends the mountaintop removal that makes the whole top of Elkins look like, oh my God, what's happening?
It's just awful.
If, in fact, you are saying what you're saying here, and sadly, you know, I'm not going to blame people for what they went along with in the past, and you have all this mountaintop removal, but part of what you've done is you've left a whole massive area that could be the West Virginia wind farm. I mean, the West Virginia solar and wind farm.
It could be the solar and wind farm.
Because it's
There's no reason that you couldn't do solar and wind on the same place. And because it is a big area, you could also do sheep.
Well, you could. Well, yeah,
you could restore
agriculture and maybe beautiful parks, and maybe you could even make it into hunting land. You could make it like for everybody that wants to go up there and and
I
shoot
know.
Bambi. You could. Oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to imply anybody would ever shoot Bambi. I retract that statement.
Shoot Bambi's mom.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Okay, all right. Okay, so anyway, I'm just saying there are so many good things that can be done, and I would like Senator. I'm seeing Senator Manchin say some. He has actually gone to where he recognizes that
he does.
You could have a system of tax credits and all that.
So what we need to do is say, look, we need to. I understand that there are people that you know when you say, we might lose some coal jobs. Well, but folks, you're highly trained. That means you can also be retrained in solar, in wind, and everything else. You're not going to lose your job. You're just going to change jobs.
You would have a better job. Now, I'm going to say one last thing, and I almost thought I'm not going to go here, but years ago, when Doctors Alfred Stiller and John Zonlo were working on all kinds of wonderful things for value-added carbon
from
coal. Do you know, Robert, one of the most important things that they advocated for was something called a direct carbon fuel cell?
Yes.
The direct carbon
fuel cell. We have had long conversations about this.
And we could have one now, but let's not, because I'm just going to ask people to, they can fire up their own Google machine and look for direct carbon fuel cell.
Direct carbon fuel cell.
And they'll find out that it's a technology that's been around for a long time. But the point is that and this would also be a reference to people that like molten salt things.
Mm-hmm.
There's basically a well-known technology that involves having molten salt. So, I think by the time they were using potassium, KOH or NaOH, but you have a salt that you're, and the point of it is you're using basically coal, but in a value-added refined form,
right,
to have a direct carbon fuel cell that produces all kinds of clean electricity with no,
Right.
Anyway, I don't want to go there because I'm so excited about China.
Okay.
Let's go to the China launch. I thought it was interesting. One of the people was showing the inside of their space station, and they said, hey, they're going to keep everything. It's going to be tough for other people to join with them because everything is written in. You know how, like, you would have something that would just be, some little symbol for whatever it would be. But they have a big, long thing of Chinese, characters. It's really, wow. So here it is. This was the story before they launched. We'll look at this, and then we'll jump to the new one. They have a nice little patch
there.
And it says Chinese Space Station at the bottom. There's,
It does indeed.
But it has a whole bunch of...
On the uniform of a staff member during a news conference ahead of the launch of the Long March 2F Y-13 rocket carrying the Shenzhou
13
spacecraft and three astronauts.
Boy, they like their outfits, man. They got their patches.
Those are nice outfits. Nice blue color, too.
They've gone like full Star Trek
here. I completely agree.
Jiquan, China, Reuters, and it says this was back on the 14th when they said, China will send three astronauts to an unfinished space station early on Saturday, including the first female crew members to visit the station. Where they're going to stay for 6 months. Man, that's going to be nice.
That's a long time.
And here, see when they launched? 23
a.m.
Yeah, so... 23 minutes into the new day,
yes.
And which means that, of course, their new day began on our Friday night kind of thing. So there's a bunch of good stuff here. It talks about their space station, the Tianhe, slightly bigger than a bus, city bus, will be their living quarters. Anyway, there's a bunch of stuff. What I want to do is let's skip ahead. Let's go back to the... Launchpad of science.
For those folks that are just tuning in, this is October 16th, 2021, and we're at radiosciencenews.org, so you can join in.
Yeah, you need to know that to follow along efficiently.
So let's do more.
So I did more because this is the story that popped up, I think maybe from, this was from PhysOrg. As I was researching one of my favorite sites, PhysOrg, which has all kinds of good sciencey stuff, China launches three astronauts on a six-month thing, and it's the photo from the Xinhua.
Nice photo.
Yeah, news agency. There's the. I guess if you click on that. Anyway, they're sending.
I like the fact that they're calling this the new orbiting outpost.
Wow.
I like the term outpost.
Two veterans of space travel, 55 and 41-year-old, and 41, a gentleman making his first trip. They were seen off by a military band and supporters. Singing, of course, Robert, I always like to sing this song, Ode to the Motherland. Ode to the Motherland. No, I don't know Ode to the Motherland. They have a bunch of stuff that's kind of neat. People singing songs, and then everything, they have great... names. Here's the part I wanted to look
nice
show you here.
Suits too.
Yeah, it says when completed,
like,
with the addition
suits
of two more sections, and those are called Mengtian and Wentian. The station will weigh about 66 tons, which is a fraction of the size of the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm. Well,
which is like 450 tons when completed. Oh, it looks like they're embarking from a scamp trailer down here too. I could be wrong.
Scamp trailer.
No, they're not. So anyway, this is they say that they're sending humans into space as a common cause of mankind, and China would continue to extend the depth and breadth of international cooperation and exchanges. So that's all, that sounds really good. And then it says, but they wanted to point out that China was excluded from International Space Station largely due to U.S. objections over Chinese program's secretive nature and close military ties. What? They're not wearing any ties. What are you talking about?
There's no ties there.
Yeah. Anyway, this has a big, long thing, and it's talking about their space probe to Mars. A lot of good stuff. Now, what I wanted to do was go back to the article that talks about the Tiangong itself.
Okay, the Tiangong.
And I'm trying not to spend too much time on this, because if you know it's here and it's on the launch pad
now,
of science.
For some reason, my computer is not letting me go to certain.
It says things. Private.
Yes. Well, there's some weird thing going on with stuff.
All right,
stuff.
So you can just look at mine. Let's hope. So there's a pretty picture of China's Tiangong space station, what it is, what it's for, and how to see it. So if you scroll through this whole thing, it's talking about the rising Asian superpower seeking to catch up, flying missions to the moon and Mars, launching heavy lift rockets, building a new new space telescope set for 2024.
Hmm.
To watch the American elections from outer space. So their space telescope will probably be looking at lots of things. It's a real nice little primer about what the space station is. It talks about the core.
Very cool.
It's the core capsule, which is named Harmony of Heavens.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, these could be country songs. Harmony,
Harmony
of
Heavens.
I love it. And then it goes on about the two other modules that are going to join. Part of what I was excited about was how to live in this, how you're going to actually see it. Oh, and so you scroll down, and they did have some trouble launches. You do remember that the last time, I think they didn't worry much about where the booster would crash. And
pieces were.
Thank goodness it landed the Indian Ocean and not on Wheeling, West Virginia, which it could have. So here's the part that is interesting, how to see the Tiangong space station. Now, here's the part that's interesting. It's already visible to the naked eye. So, mm-hmm. Robert, when you're doing... and so there's a thing on
Star Watch.
Looking at this, there is a YouTube video you can watch. But what I really noticed that down here, it has a link to a website, which this one's called n2yo.com, which shows you the current locations of satellites and all kinds of stuff. So I also noticed it's every 91 minutes, whereas I think the International Space Station is every 90.
Yeah.
You know what that means,
so
Robert?
It's slightly higher.
Yeah, it's looking, they're looking down on something.
Looking down on the ISS.
No. Okay. But then, of course, as you would know, that would be for safety.
Yes.
That would be like Cessna 212, please go above the 740. Now, if you go back to the launch pad of science,
and
you'll see a
satellites.
Link. To satellites, and this takes you to www.n2yo.com, and there's a lot of stuff on here. Is yours not coming up again?
No.
Are you on Safari or?
I'm on Chrome.
Oh, okay. I'm using Safari.
Yeah. So, I like Safari better.
Oh yeah, but people told you nobody uses it, Robert.
Right. That's
I usually
why
use,
I'm using it. Okay.
Well, I usually use. I'm actually a bigger fan of Sea Monkey. People are laughing. He's making that up again. No,
he's making up the Sea Monkey again.
Sea Monkey is one it's the great grandson of Netscape Gold and still works nice. But if you do go to Safari, I think you might be better off.
All right, let's.
And when I go to Safari, it has it's got so much stuff. Like there's a thing of the most tracked satellites. When you look at this, you go look. It's the space station, followed by SES-1, followed by NOAA 19, GOES. These are weather satellites. Mm-hmm. 13. No, there's this whole list. There's, and then Tiangong 1 is way down here. But
okay.
These things. So just launched. Look how many are just launched. Oh, look at all these OneWeb modules. There are a bunch of the Elon Musk things.
Oh, I hate
satellites on orbital alerting tools. Part of what you can do, if you look at the first thing they are showing you there. I think this is actually, this must be the International Space Station, and it shows.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things you can do to customize your use of this thing is you can put your current location. It actually shows up there, which is really cool from your IP address. But then you can also create a list of the ones that you want to watch. So I know this may sound pretty, complicated. But for example, it has, I know that when I, you can search for a satellite, and then you can actually like say, I'm going to watch this one.
Mm-hmm.
And like you can have the International Space Station and maybe the Chinese space station.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And right at the top, it says the ISS will cross your sky in 17 minutes and 37 seconds. So, Robert, if we went outside on this sunny day, we wouldn't be able to see it. But it's going to be crossing our sky. Anyway, very useful. N2YO.com. They're tracking 23,726 objects. And it talks about the things that are crossing your sky right now. Well, look how many of them are crossing our sky right now.
Look at that.
So then you can find a satellite, search, and then, as I say, when you finally do get that, there's a way that you can actually, click on it. So it's as if you were like watching for a stock to go up or down. It'll let you know. And there's a big list of just all the different. I mean, there's just so much stuff to look at. The field of satellite watching has become kind of just like a fun thing for a lot of people. A lot of times they just go, oh, there's another one. Here's one. Oh, there two. One's going north. One's going south. I mean, it's fun to be at a star watch now and realize that people have, I mean, they have something that just popped up, which is satellite live view, West Virginia satellite view, real-time satellite tracking, track a cell phone, live satellite. There's just so much good stuff on this little site that I advocate that you take a little time if you are of the ilk. The astronomical observers that Robert and I like to be. So I'm going to jump to exoplanets, and you were already ahead of me. You heard about this.
Yes.
I think there's life out there. Well, Robert, that's nice. That's nicely put. Powerful radio antenna used for the first time to find exoplanets.
Yeah, now when...
You got this from some Aussies. They said,
yes.
Somebody sent this to
yes.
you. I recognize that.
Good friend of mine, Alisa King, sent me this. But when I first saw it, I was thinking that they were using radio telescopes to send out a radar signal. That's how this appears. But you're going, that can't possibly be.
As Stephen Hawking would say, don't put up a sign that says "Stop here for food and women." You know, you don't want to do that.
Right.
That's a reference to a Stephen Hawking thing. You guys might have to look it up yourself. But as you say, that this is, and it's like low frequency array. And I was not aware of all of these, but it says using the world's most powerful antenna, because I've been familiar with some big antennas like on Guam. I had a chance to visit the elephant cage the Navy had. It's called the Low Frequency Array in Netherlands. And so it's called the LOFAR.
LOFAR.
Yeah, that looks like that should be LOFAN, shouldn't it? In Netherlands? Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what the... It's low, F-A-N. Why is it not LOFAN if it's in the Netherlands? I'm not even going to ask these questions. but it says they are using the low-frequency array. They discovered radio signals from 19 distant red dwarf stars. Red Dwarf, great TV show. Anyway, it says four of them are emitting signals that indicate planets are orbiting them. See, right there I was going to go, wait, what do you mean? Explain that.
Exactly.
But they probably will if I read enough. If you scroll through this, it talks about what LOFAR is. It's a pathfinder. It's a development of and when I think of the square kilometer array, it reminds me of something Robert has talked about many times for discovering NEOs. Because the square kilometer array will be the world's largest telescope.
Yes.
And LOFAR is a mini version of what we can expect the array in 5 to 10 years. Using radio signals, importantly working out how to screen out other objects to focus on red dwarfs. It's kind of, so they have some filtering thing,
yes.
Concepts that are like polarized sunglasses. They eliminate the noise. It's like that signal to noise ratio.
Yeah,
thing.
they're trying to boost that,
yeah.
so they can see the.
You
the
see,
radio,
that reminds me when
we
were talking about how if they were looking for. We talked to some SETI people once, and we were saying that the aliens would probably be communicating with a frequency that was just off of the hydrogen hum.
Yes.
Because we would never know if they were if they had something that was slightly different from that frequency, it would be blocked.
Yeah.
And we would never detect them. And they said, oh, yeah, well, that's interesting. I don't know. So anyway, this is a cool story about that. And I'm looking at our time. I want to make sure we get to some of the others because they're kind of related. In fact, just for fun, since they mentioned the red dwarves, let's jump over to the white dwarf.
Let's do it.
And we'll jump back. I know.
Now, I just want to say that I don't like the names red dwarf, black dwarf, white dwarf. It's just not good naming, and I really think that astronomers can come up with something a little better.
Yeah. Well, and their thing is just to sort of have a big generalistic. Well, this is a red giant, and that's so. This is a white dwarf.
Yeah.
I agree.
Know, I find it kind of sloppy.
When I think of this little fastest spinning white dwarf, I think of they should let Warner Brothers cartoonists. This would be like the Tasmanian devil dwarf.
There you go.
But isn't this interesting? Can you imagine, Robert? They have now detected what they as so far is the fastest spinning white dwarf ever seen. Rotates every 25 seconds. And the one that before that was like a 30-second, and that was like an amazing thing. And they have to illustrate.
So this is in 25 seconds?
Yeah, 25 seconds. It's
so if this thing is essentially the size of the Earth, let's say that's what the size of a white dwarf. They're usually a fairly large terrestrial planet size. So the circumference of the Earth is about 25,000 miles. So this rotates once in 25 seconds.
Wow.
So that means that the surface speed at the equator of this thing is 1,000 miles a second.
Wow.
1,600 kilometers per second.
Yeah, and so part of I'm immediately thinking about, okay, so at what point does it just fly apart like a bad transmission or something?
Oh, well.
But the gravity is enormous.
The gravity is so intense, it can spin faster.
It can do it, yeah. This is really neat. And part of what the mechanism for, they have a nice little illustration that says the white dwarfs can spin faster because it has an adjacent red dwarf that dumps gas onto it.
Oh, that's really cool.
So it's kind of like...
So that's what's speeding up. I just did the math. This thing is spinning 0.5% the speed of light at the equator.
Well, that's what I was wondering when you were doing that math on. I thought, wow.
That's incredible.
This is
that's
really cool.
Awesome.
It says the star's only known rival is an even faster spinning object in orbit with the blue star HD 49798, but the rapid rotator's nature is unclear.
Yeah, could be a white dwarf, could be a neutron star.
Spinning even faster. Wow.
Wow.
Well, so, that is
so. So this thing is spinning at least 1,000 miles a second at the equator.
Wow.
0.5% the speed of light.
That, and fortunately for Santa Claus, the North Pole he can actually stand there and, well, no, he'd be spinning pretty fast too. He'd be kind of spinning it, if Santa Claus stood on the North Pole, Robert, of this white dwarf, he would be rotating. Oh, that you wouldn't even fall over, would you? I mean, think of the playground and stuff where on that.
Think of the squish.
That is so cool. Okay, we're gonna jump back because I was so rude to jump over radio waves.
No,
strange
fine.
Radio waves emerging from. I should have some spooky music for that, but I'm not. Strange radio waves emerge from the direction of the galactic center.
Well, what could be happening at the galactic center?
Well,
I mean, there's just like galactic black hole. There's probably all kinds of neat stuff. I mean, the density of the stars there is much, much greater than it is out in the outskirts of the galaxy arms where we are.
This is cool.
So there's all kinds of cool stuff to be going on.
And they do point out, it says, they've discovered unusual signals coming from the direction of the Milky Way's center, and it fits, these particular radio waves fit no currently understood pattern of variable radio source and could suggest maybe a new class of stellar object.
That would be awesome.
Really cool.
See, I want to remind our readers that we keep thinking that the now is the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But in 15, 20 years, the present now would be the past. And the past is when all of the cool things are found.
Yeah.
It could very well be that this is the new class of.
Well, and they give you some clues. This is almost like the beginning of an interesting sign. The strangest property of this new signal is that it has a very high polarization. This means that its light oscillates in only one direction, but the direction rotates with time. Oh man. So it's kind of like a police car's thing, and it's going flashing this way, but then it's rolling over as it goes off a cliff, or I don't know. This is really.
I don't know. I definitely want to know more.
So it oscillates in one direction, but that direction of oscillation changes with time. So it's varying. Wow, this is really neat. Okay, so they thought it was a pulsar, a very dense type of spinning dead star, or else a type of star that emits huge solar flares, but the signals from the new source don't match that object. This is going to be one of those interesting puzzles.
They said that they were observing it for 15 minutes every few weeks, hoping that they would see it again. So this thing is only visible for a few minutes every
Well, that's even
few
crazy.
Weeks.
And down here it says, after detecting 6 radio signals from the source over 9 months, the astronomers tried to find the object in visual light and found nothing.
Oh, that is really
well,
cool.
And of course, there could be things you
Sure. Yeah, there could be
some things are only
dust and gas in the way. Yeah. If this is a radio signal, radio signals are essentially transparent to dust and gas, but the optical wavelengths would be blocked.
And if you scroll down, they mention the square kilometer array, the SKA SKA, which is also music from Portnoy and ska band. But that's going to be really good. But then there, if
within
you are
the next decade, though,
and then
so
there's a video. They said there's a cool video showing an artist's impression of the signals from space. Robert, did you see that right there?
Yeah,
I'm clicking. I couldn't resist.
Go for it.
I'm going to see what the artist's impression of signals from space. Oh, it's only 15 seconds long. Okay. That's the ad for MailChimp. Hi there, MailChimp.
That pretty much sums it up as far as I'm concerned. MailChimp.
Okay, so they're showing.
Oh, there they are. There's the artist conception.
Well, they're like a little spiral of things coming from.
Slinkies from space.
Slinkies. So it's 20. It's only about 20 seconds, but it's okay. Well, yeah, that's. That didn't help me a whole lot. I'm just going to say.
That isn't showing me anything.
Slinkies. It could be. We could be invaded by slinkies. Life forms.
Slinkies from space.
Vortex force from another planet. Okay, so a real project would be NASA's Project Lucy.
Okay.
And I'm seeing that we're looking at. I'm looking at how much time we're doing.
We've
pretty
got
good
about
here.
7.5 minutes.
So the nice thing about looking at Lucy is, again, you're not getting it.
Oh man,
what is happening?
I don't know.
So let me get to NASA's Lucy, and then I do want to spend some time with the synchronized thing before we go. So 5 cool things to know about Lucy's mission to the Trojan asteroids. This is one of Robert's favorite places.
Yes, I love the Trojan
asteroids. The spacecraft is headed to the space rocks that tag along in Jupiter's orbit.
Mm-hmm. So the Trojan asteroids, 60 degrees in front of Jupiter, 60 degrees behind. It makes an equilateral triangle with the Trojan points with Jupiter and the Sun. And so these are gravitationally stable places, and any asteroid that wanders in there without too much speed will essentially be sort of held there.
Pulled into the cult, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a light little paragraph that talks about the gravitationally trapped in the same orbit as Jupiter around the Sun, ahead and the other behind. Blah, blah, blah.
And even though this is 5 times further away from the Earth, from the Sun, than the Earth is. These are all fairly dark, and it's kind of hard to see them because they're further away than the asteroid belt. But what's interesting is there are thought to be more asteroids in the Trojan
than the whole
zones,
the belt itself
than the whole main asteroid belt. So there's a lot of stuff in there to go and investigate.
Now, this article covers a ton of stuff, and I'll tell you what I'm just going to do. We're just going to read through the highlights and then jump ahead because, again, we know you guys are really smart. You'll look at these things and you'll take the time. The Trojan asteroids are a solar system time capsule.
Yep.
And as Robert said, things get trapped in there. The spacecraft will visit more individual objects than any other single spacecraft. You go, Lucy. He's going to visit 8 asteroids, including their moons. Oh, my gosh.
This will be awesome.
Lucy will have a weird flight path. In order to do that, there's going to be a very complex path. October 2022 will be Anyway, Lucy will travel further from the sun than any other solar-powered craft. The inspiration for Lucy's name is decidedly Earthbound. It has to do with the discovery of a fossil of a human ancestor.
Lucy, I figured it was.
Well, that's really neat. Great. That's going to be really interesting, and we'll follow as it goes along. I want to go to the synchronized first because, if we don't have that much time for concrete, who cares, right, Robert? No. Okay. First of all, if you are familiar with the Gulf Stream, then that's probably because you're you consider yourself a bastion of Western civilization. But if you don't know what the Kuroshio Current is, then you need to get on board here. This is absolutely... So they're showing on top of the atmospheric jet stream, and it says that a team of researchers with members affiliated large number of institutions across have found that the Gulf Stream and the Kuroshio are synchronized on a decadal time scale. Does that mean every 10 years,
yes,
or do they mean decades? It could be more decades, is what I was wondering. Here we go. Gulf Stream. Let's see if you can. I want to get to the. See, the thing is, I was not all that familiar with that, but I'm thinking, of course, you and I have talked about how as heat from the Kuroshio is carried in the atmosphere where it met, storms were generated. The jet stream is part of this synchronization, too.
Is it the jet stream that is. That may be the synchronizing factor. Keeping them in sync?
It apparently says the jet stream carried that energy across the continental U.S. and all the way to the Atlantic. There it collided with heat carried in the atmosphere by the Gulf Stream. The vast distances involved meant it took a long time for energy from one of the currents to have an impact on the other. But the end result was some degree of synchronization of the two currents. And so this is kind of new, but basically they're feeling this could be... this last sentence, a finding that could improve weather forecasting in the Northern Hemisphere in the future.
Well, this is really amazing.
That is neat. So I'm looking at that. The little chart at the top is what kind of gives you the...
What's so fascinating is that the energy in each are going to be synchronized, but the time... For the jet stream to go from the Gulf
all the way, basically, almost like around the other side of the world,
the way to Japan, that's going to take. Let's see.
It's definitely, they just say, well, it's such a long distance and it's a long period of time, but in the end, there is a degree of synchronization going on.
The jet stream goes at 600 miles an hour. Yeah. That's an exaggeration. It would still take 29 hours for it to get from divide by two. It would take about 15 hours to go from one side to the other. So yeah.
But again, it's like...
That's really interesting.
It's a little bit like can't see the forest for the trees. Sometimes you don't realize that big things are happening.
Right.
Because you're so small or you don't...
And when they're talking about them being synchronized, what do they mean?
Yeah, well...
Do they mean the flow rates, the flow directions?
And it may just be adding or subtracting strength from. I see we're actually Robert. 59 seconds.
We are there.
Yep. I'm going to start the song if I'm trying. I think if my little thing would click up. Where is my little? Well, I'm telling you, technology I hate to think it's failing me, Robert.
Technology don't fail me.
Oh, it's just taking me to Apple Music. Never mind. Forget the theme. He says I have to sign in. I'm not even going to do it. He was right there on my desktop, too. Okay, so listen. I want you to look at this Roman noble woman's issue here.
Robert. Okay, all right.
We have like 20 seconds, but we may hold this over till next week.
Yes, we certainly will.
Because we like concrete. I mean, we like, in the abstract, I like concrete. How about you, Robert?
I love
you like
concrete.
The concrete in the abstract?
In the abstract.
But it's going to, you guys have seen all those shows where they say Roman concrete was really good stuff.